But I wonder, can anybody relate to the awkwardness and the difficulty of having made a decision, but you can't actually speak about it with anyone yet? That's a really awkward place to be in, right? So a couple of years ago, I went with some other staff members to a conference. And it was a great conference, but I remember being in one of the sessions and we were being asked to reflect on ministry and where things were at. And I remember sitting in that session realizing, do you know what? I can't actually answer these questions. Because there was a deeper question that I had to answer first. I had to actually answer the question of, do I need to move on from this place of ministry? And just so you know, that was not here. It was 2022. It was before I moved here. But at that conference, I was struggling with that question. Is this time for me to move on? So for the whole conference, while I was there with my boss and our children's minister, I was wrestling with this question. I chatted with one of my mentors who was also at the conference. And I came to a decision. It was time to move on from the church that I was at. And at the same time of coming to that decision, there was a sense of, the wrestling's done. Until I also got a sense of, I can't talk to my boss about this while I'm away at a conference. That is not a good time. Do you know how awkward it is to sit in an airport when the other staff member has gone to fly to West Australia to meet family and it's just the two of you sitting in an airport and there's this big thing that you can't talk about? That awkwardness that sits there. Would you like to know what makes it worse? Text after text after text of delays. There is a really difficult space of awkwardness. When you have made a decision, when you know there is something that needs to be done, but it's not quite time yet. At the moment, we are working our way through the first four chapters of Nehemiah. And God's placed something on his heart. He has this desire to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. He has a desire to restore Jerusalem. And as we explore this series, we're going to be exploring what did he go through to prepare for that rebuilding? How did he actually come about it? But the big question of the series is, what does it look like for us to rebuild something from a place of suffering? And how do we acknowledge God's faithfulness in the middle of that as well? And last week, Gavin started this series by looking at Nehemiah chapter 1 and the fact that rebuilding begins with pain. That it is the pain of loss, it is the pain of something not being right that sometimes is what we need to spur us to start the rebuilding process. Today, I want to unpack chapter 2 and I want to look at where's God's providence in guiding us forward. And when I say providence, it's a word that we sometimes use in churches and it just simply means God's provision and God's protection. It's a word that talks about the fact that our God is living and active and he's going ahead of us preparing a way. God's providence is what we have just practiced in God's stories. Looking at the way that God is at work in our lives, in the way that he is in control. And so in Nehemiah chapter 2, it begins with verse 1. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. Now, I could be mean and ask for a show of hands of everybody who just kind of glosses over months and dates in the Bible, at which point I would be the first one to put up my hand. I just kind of assumed that this was the same month that was in Nehemiah chapter 1. I was wrong. So in Nehemiah chapter 1, it says, in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa. I've got a little Bible Times calendar here. If you see, we've got Kislev here. That's sort of November, December. And all the way around here in March and April, we have Nissan. There is 100 to 130 days between the end of chapter 1 and the start of chapter 2. That's 3 to 4 months that Nehemiah has waited. Since hearing how the walls of Jerusalem were still broken, of sitting in that pain and that distress and that worry and that hurt, almost a third of a year he has been in that awkward place of waiting, of knowing that something was stirring within him, but the timing wasn't right. That he was desiring to do something, and yet so far there was nothing. And it kind of makes me wonder, how long do we wait in a place of pain? How long do we wait in these times of awkwardness, this time when things don't seem to move forward? Because as Gavin unpacked last week, it always starts with pain when we're rebuilding. But how long do we wait there? Do we stay in that sense of discomfort? You know, we want to move forward, but we're also maybe sensing now is not the time to speak about it. Like sitting in an airport with something sitting between you and this other person that you know, now is not the time to bring it up. Maybe it's those times when you are between jobs. Maybe it is those times when life stages are changing. Things are looking different. For almost a third or a quarter of a year, Nehemiah has been sitting in this place of awkwardness, waiting. And he's staying here because he knows at his very core that God is at work and that what he's being called to do in rebuilding Jerusalem is not something he can do on his own. It's something that he needs God to help with, God to be involved with. There's something stirring in Nehemiah in this moment to pause, to wait, and to look. To look for God's providence and the opportunities to move forward. And that's what we see in verses 1 to 3. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me. I was very much afraid, but I said to the king. What we have in these verses is an opportunity. In these verses, we see that there is a chance to speak to the king, a chance to bring his Nehemiah's requests before the king, to ask for help. We've got to remember, as Philip pointed out to me this week, this king is the same king who said yes to Ezra and then said, "Hang on, let's pause that," before saying, "Let's go again." And while this is a different king, it is the same nation for whom Esther, who was favored by the king, was scared to approach him without permission. It was dangerous. It was deadly. This is not something that you just walk into the king and go, "Hey, can I just talk to you about something?" Here we notice that it's actually the king who starts the conversation. The king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." See, the first thing we learn from Nehemiah about God's providence is we need to look for the opportunity so that we can test it. Here in these verses, we see that God was going ahead of Nehemiah. He was preparing the king's heart, making sure that the heart was soft towards Nehemiah, towards his requests. This king is a person of peace, somebody who likes Nehemiah, who is wanting to help him and support him. Because God has gone ahead, God has prepared the way. And this is the moment that Nehemiah has been sitting, waiting for over 100 days. For almost a quarter of a year, Nehemiah has been waiting for this moment, and I bet that this moment arrived at the time when he least expected it. Nehemiah says he had not been sad in the king's presence before. Given the way the kings of that time acted, I'd probably watch my attitude when I walked into that room as well. I'd probably make sure I had a big smile on my face. But today, for some reason, Nehemiah didn't. Maybe he was distracted. Or maybe there was something like God moving that prompted the king to pay attention to Nehemiah, to notice more than just a cursory glance, but to see that there was something deeper going on. Whatever it was, here is an opportunity, a chance to talk, to share with the king. And Nehemiah says, I was very much afraid, but I said to the king. Here, Nehemiah doesn't just see the opportunity, he chooses to test it. King, why shouldn't I be sad when the city of my ancestors lies in ruins? He doesn't pour out his entire heart. He doesn't say, I want to go and fix it. He just says, this is why I'm sad. He gives a little bit. He tests the opportunity. He sees what the king's response is going to be. And I wonder, what are some of the opportunities that God has gone ahead of us to prepare? What are some of the opportunities that God is placing in front of us at the moment? Maybe there is a person that just happens to come across your path. Somebody who has the right skills, somebody who has an idea that sparks something in you. And that is the opportunity that you are looking for, that God is providing for you. Maybe it's as you scroll on Facebook, you just see the advertisement for a job and you go, that's it. That's what I've been waiting for. To re-spark my passion, to move to where I feel I need, I'm being called. Maybe it is a soft heart and someone in authority noticing you, like the king with Nehemiah. Or maybe it is a resource that's just shared. I mean, just this week, Gavin sent me an article on Tuesday about rest and different types of rest. And he sent it to me because in May for our DT sessions, we're going to be exploring God's rest rhythms. And he sent it to me saying, hey, maybe this would be a good one to use in May. And he's right, it will be. But there was also an opportunity there. God was speaking to me and challenging me on the way I see rest. To move from a place of pain to a place of rebuilding and restoration. There are these opportunities around us as God moves. But we have to have open eyes to see them. We have to choose to look and pay attention to where God is at and what he is doing. And we test them. We just put out a little bit and we see what the response is. We see how it goes. And Nehemiah shared a little bit with the king. Why wouldn't I be sad? My city is in ruins. And in verse 4, we see the response. The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven. Nehemiah's tested it. He's seen that the king is open to the possibility. He's open for more. King's going, what do you want? And I love Nehemiah's response in this moment. Because he acknowledges God is at work. He prays. Nehemiah takes the moment to acknowledge that this is not a coincidence. This is all and solely from God. And maybe Nehemiah says, thank you. Maybe Nehemiah says, help. God, I wasn't prepared for this today. Help. Maybe he's like, God, I need to say the words because if these are my words, I am going to stuff this up. We don't know exactly what Nehemiah prayed. What we know is he took, in the middle of this situation, he took a couple of seconds and he acknowledged, God, you are the one in control here. God, you are at work here in this moment. I am experiencing God's providence right now and I need your help as we move forward as well to prepare the way and provide for this dream that you have placed inside me. How well do you acknowledge God at work? Because what I love about Nehemiah is this is in the middle of a conversation. This, he doesn't need to get down on his knees and pray. He just shoots a quick arrow prayer to God. God, I need you in this moment. Thank you for who you are and what you're doing. Where do you need to acknowledge God at work in what's been happening around you? And sometimes we have the presence of mind to actually notice it in the moment, like Nehemiah. But I've had so many moments when I've walked out of a conversation, and it's been as I've been driving in the car afterwards that I've gone, huh, thanks, God. It's about choosing to acknowledge him and remember that he is at work in that. And we continue on with verses 5 to 9. And I answered the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. And then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, how long will your journey take? And when will you get back? It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, if it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence I will occupy. And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my requests. So I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. There's that beautiful line in there, and because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my requests. Nehemiah keeps acknowledging that it is God who is at work. It is God's providence, it is God's protection, it is God's provision that this is possible. It is all from God. But before that, it says, and I answered the king. Nehemiah has prayed, and then he chooses to answer the king's question of what do you want? What we see here with Nehemiah is he is taking hold of the opportunity that God is providing. And what I love about it is he doesn't just take hold of a little bit. He takes hold of all of it. He's seen that this king is open to what he's asking. The king keeps the conversation going, keeps asking questions, keeps wanting to know more. And so Nehemiah chooses to pour his heart out to the king. I want to go back to Jerusalem. I want to rebuild the walls. I want to restore this city because it's important to me. There is this dream in me, and he's no longer just testing the opportunities now. He's actually fully sharing his heart. This is what I'm wanting to do. And again, God is going ahead and preparing the hearts because the king and the queen say, how long are you going to be away for? Like, that is a beautiful encouragement for an open conversation. That is a beautiful encouragement for somebody who's willing to say yes. And I wonder how shocked Nehemiah was when that was, and just if he said the first thing that came into his mind. But he says it, and then he takes hold a little bit further of the opportunity that God is providing. Verse 7, I also said, you know, Nehemiah sees that there is goodwill here and he goes, I wonder, is there just a little bit more that I can take? A little bit more that I can grab hold of? A little bit more that God is providing? And he sees that the king's nodding. He sees that there's openness. And so he goes, oh, and could I also have a letter to Asaph? He goes a little bit further again and takes hold of a little bit more. Because God is providing a soft heart of the king. And God has provided this moment. And so Nehemiah does not want to waste a little bit of it. And so he wants all that is being offered and all that is on offer. And you know what? When I read that, I feel really uncomfortable. Because I'm the sort of person who looks at a situation and go, I don't want to cause a problem. Like, I probably would have stopped after just being allowed to go to the city of Jerusalem. Like, I'm like, that's enough. I still get to live out the dream. And yet Nehemiah is like, there's more here. God's got more for me. And he keeps asking and he keeps taking more of what God has on hold for him. He has this beautiful boldness to fully accept the whole entirety of what God has for him. And there's a beautiful detail at the end of verse 9. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. Not only did Nehemiah ask for more than he probably thought he was going to get when the conversation started, the king gave even more. Beyond his dreams, beyond his hopes. There is something beautiful here about God's generosity and what is going on in this moment. And as I think about Nehemiah taking these opportunities, as I think about his boldness as he steps forward and as he asks the question, I wonder, are there opportunities that we need to be more bold in taking? Are there times and places where we are willing to just take a little bit when God actually has more prepared for us? Are there times when we let our fear and our worry cloud us to the fact that God has actually gone ahead? Because this whole chapter is about providence. This whole situation is God has gone ahead and he has prepared the way. He has provided and he has protected and he has got this for Nehemiah. Where is God going ahead of us and preparing things? Where is God going ahead of us, and do we need to more boldly take hold of those things? And when I say boldly, I don't mean that we just go in and we take, that we are rude, that we are arrogant or anything like that, because you look at Nehemiah's words the entire way through that, and he respects the king. If it pleases the king, may I also. King, you are great. He keeps to all of the forms. He keeps to manners. He keeps to the situation. He understands that the king is the boss in this situation under God. And yet he's willing to engage. He's willing to ask for more. He's willing to take hold of all that God has prepared. Do we need to step forward boldly? To take hold of things a little bit more. I think back to that awkwardness of sitting in an airport, eating a meal with my boss on the other side, knowing that there's something that there was a sense that I should not bring that up right then. And I'm really glad that I listened to that. But then when you get home, there is a temptation to just leave it. Once you're out of the awkwardness of a situation, there is a temptation to just walk away and not touch that again, like hide it in a box. And I'm really glad that I didn't. Because once we got home, I had the sense that now's the right time to have this conversation. So the next week, I went and I talked to my boss. And I shared like what I'd been discerning about moving on. And God had gone away ahead of me. And God had been preparing the way. And it was a beautiful moment and time of encouragement and support and help and mentoring in transitioning from one place to another. But I had to choose to be bold, to take hold of the opportunity, to have that conversation then when there wasn't actually anything lined up yet, but to step forward in faith. Because we follow a God who is living and active and involved in our lives, not just in the times of the Bible, but in our lives today. God is active and involved with us and in our lives. His providence, his protection, his provision is evident in so many areas of our lives, in so many ways. And in these times of rebuilding, sometimes we sit in that pain for a while. We sit in that awkwardness. We sit in that difficulty of going, we know something needs to shift, but we don't know when to start. God is at work. And we need to choose to look for the opportunities that he is providing. Look for where he is at work and be ready to jump on those opportunities when they arise, even when it's unexpected. To choose to acknowledge where God is at work and what he is doing, even in the moment. And sometimes, maybe we need to pray and ask, God, can I have a little bit of boldness to ask for more of what you have for me here in this space? Let me pray. Lord Jesus, Lord, I want to say thank you for the way that you were, that you are at work in our lives. Lord, as we shared before the sermon in those groups about where you have been at work in our lives, Lord, it was so encouraging to hear the conversations happening in the room, to hear people sharing these stories of where you are at work, that we are seeing what you are doing. But God, we thank you that you are living and active and involved in our world today. And Lord, when we are in those awkward places, those places of waiting, the in-between, when we are asking the question, when do we need to move out of this place? Lord, help us to have eyes to see where you are. Help us to be ready for the opportunities that you place ahead of us and before us. And Lord, in these moments and in these times, may you give us the courage and boldness to claim all that you are preparing for us in a way that honors you and glorifies your name, so that we may rebuild according to the dreams and the hopes that you have placed within us. Lord, these things we pray in your name. Amen.